The Vietnam War is the 10-part, 18-hour series Ken Burns co-directed with Lynn Novick. It premiered on PBS on September 17, 2017. Then in 2018, the fifth evening with Ken Burns in support of the Telluride Museum, Burns chose to screen episode 6, Things Fall Apart. So this year marks a return to Vietnam and to the chapter that comes just before the one screened 8 years ago. So why the return to Vietnam? Why this earlier chapter now? This is Susan Zeebrock, Telluride Inside Now, looking forward to my annual conversation with Ken Burns in support of the museum. The screening is of This Is What We Do from the Vietnam War takes place at the Palm Theater on August 30th. Ken, thanks for taking the time out of your crazy schedule to join me.
It's my pleasure, Susan. Thank you for having me.
So let's begin with your program choice for the Palm. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting Act of 1967 was signed into law by Lyndon Johnson in November 1967. So this screening jibes with the hour set in the second half of the year, the very month public broadcasting came into being under LBJ. At the moment, federal funding has been stripped away. Do those facts in any way guide your selection of This Is What We Do for the program on the 30th?
No, but you've done amazing amount of homework to do that. I'm now working on a film on LBJ and the Great Society. He is, of course, got one of the most significant legislative accomplishments of any president, probably second only to FDR. But out of his presidency comes the Civil Rights Act, the Voting Rights Act, most importantly, Medicare, Medicaid, public broadcasting. And while the Vietnam War covered, among many other presidential administrations, his disastrous foreign policy experience there, sinking us deeper into war, this new project that we're working on that should be out in a few years is solely about the domestic agenda and how those foreign affairs, the guns got louder and louder, drowning out his ability to completely affect it. But no, I picked this just based on wanting to see something that I hadn't seen in a while. But I do owe you a big apology, because last year we were talking about Huey Long and you had sort of suggested that I might have chosen it because of what was going on politically. And I went, no. And it was true that I had just chosen it because I had literally been at least 10 years, maybe 15 years, since I'd actually sat down and watched the whole thing.
Right.
But as I sat down with my children and son-in-law and grandchildren in the theater and watched it, I realized that a film that came out in 1985 and was an interesting story that didn't bear any relationship to the larger America, it was this amazing story about a dictator in Louisiana. And I realized, of course, that every single line was now rhyming with the present moment. So you were correct. You were correct to ask. It was chosen innocently. This one, too, not with sort of larger, signs and intentions, just the sense that, to revisit some of these projects that you live in and breathe in and then go out on the road for a year and promote and you sort of know backwards and forwards and then move on to new things, and they don't atrophy. You just want to come back and be reminded about a good friend. And this is the episode that we showed many years ago, the sixth episode of Things Fall Apart, was about the Tet Offensive. And this is the 6 months or so leading up to the Tet Offensive. It's very interesting that there's a collapsing of time in the Vietnam series. It is 10 episodes. And the first one covers a lot of ground, and the last one covers a lot of ground. And then the second one will cover 2 or 3 years, and the next to the last one will cover a couple of years. And then by the time you get to the middle episodes of 5 and 6, they're really, less than 6 months or approximately 6 months as the story becomes so intense.
Thank you for that very clear answer. And very in-depth. I am going to push the politics just a tiny bit more. Back in 2018, the director of the Telluride Museum, Kiernan Lannan, called the series the perfect film to screen, quote, given the almost eerie parallels to what is going on with our present political situation. Does that framing feel sharper to you now than it did back then?
No, and it's a really good point. I think that, you know, and I think we probably talked about it too, Mark Twain is supposed to have said history doesn't repeat itself. And of course, it doesn't. No event happens twice. No event has ever happened twice. But he said, no, history doesn't repeat itself, but it rhymes, supposedly. Mm-hmm. And if he did, he's absolutely right. The Bible, the Old Testament, Ecclesiastes to be specific, says what has been mm-hmm. will be again, what has been done will be done again. There's nothing new under the sun, implying that human nature doesn't change and that human nature mm-hmm. superimposes itself over the seemingly random chaos of events. And so at any given moment, I mean, I just finished a film on the American Revolution that's been out mm-hmm. in the world, and it is rhyming in every way with the present moment, you know, from
yes,
from
yes.
no kings to whatever. But you have to, as a filmmaker, not point neon signs at it and say, oh, isn't this so much like today? And I think also, as an artist, you have to say, I'm in the storytelling business, and I'm interested in complicated, complex stories, and I'm diving into whatever subject it is, not to pass commentary on the moment, mm-hmm. but to actually find out what went on and do it in a complex way. It took us 10 and a half years to do the Vietnam series. You know, we began it in December of 2006. We worked all the way through. We were locking it, beginning to lock it in December of 2015, in advance mm-hmm. of that November 2017 broadcast. December of 2016 was 1 month, 2015 was 1 month before the Iowa caucuses in 2016, out of which Donald Trump was not supposed to emerge. So a film that was essentially done and we were doing the finishing mm-hmm. touches on it was done mm-hmm. even before there was a remote chance. And even then, no one believed that he would ever do that. So I Kiernan is, you know, right. Of course, you can see rhymes in it, but my job is not to do that. My job is to tell a good story. And then maybe the past helps you have a kind of perspective, a kind of view on what's going on in the present, but not one in which I'm actively trying to editorialize.
Okay, so I think you've actually answered what was to be my next question, which is that you and Lynn Novick famously refused to spell out parallels to the present for when you initially screened the Vietnam War series. So 8 years on, do you still trust audiences to draw their own conclusions?
Of course.
Or has the moment, has the moment changed enough that you want to fill in or at least suggest some parallels out loud?
No, there's no need to. It's a waste of time. What it does is it plays to a kind of media culture which is only about binaries, only on-off switch,
uh-huh.
when nothing in nature or human nature is at all about a binary. What is that sometimes a thing and the opposite of a thing, as Wynton Marsalis said in our jazz film, are true at the mm-hmm. same time, and not necessarily between people, but within a person. And so what mm-hmm. you have to do is struggle for a complex relationship to tolerating, you know, both things, undertow and complexity that is, you know, central to, you know, what we do as human beings. And just this need to say it's one thing or the other then pulls it down. And I think human beings really want to decide morally one thing, this is good, this is bad. But quite often, you know, Pogo, Walt Kelly said it in his famous comic strip, Pogo, mm-hmm. we have met the enemy and he is us.
right.
If you can't for a second transcend, you know, the inability, you know, understand that our inability to see ourselves is in who we are and all our contradictions is one of the great foibles of humankind.
Thank you for that. Given then that everyone in the theater will have lived or is living through a moment when they distrust or are distrusting their government's account of reality, what do you hope this is what we do and the year 1967 will teach them?
I don't want to teach anybody. I want to tell them a good story and let them make the conclusions that they want. It's like saying, you know, you put the Mona Lisa, Leonardo, in the blue dress. What was the reason? Was in fashion? Or I know that she was the wife of a well-to-do Florentinian silk merchant. Are you commenting on the class system that dominated the life of Renaissance Florence? No. It's you want to tell a story because it's a good story. I mean, I could right now just switch out and put another film in and everybody could sort of try to read the tea leaves of it. I don't expect anything from a story. I work for years to try to tell a good story. I know that it has numerous free electrons that people will interpret differently. And that's the point of art. It's not to subscribe, as I'm being a broken record, to a dialectic or a binary. Mm-hmm. They just don't exist. And that the need to do it is just a superficial human tendency that we need to just outgrow.
Okay. I'll never ask you a teaching question again. I will, and I will sign up for the fact that you're one of the world's best storytellers. But you've also described yourself as an emotional archaeologist. So can I ask?
Yeah.
What emotion do you want a Telluride audience to leave the problem with after the screening and your talk?
So once again, you're thinking that a film is a product, that it's got to produce some specific thing. It doesn't. It has different things for different people. Let's go back to the Mona Lisa that's sitting in the Louvre, you know.
Uh-huh.
Each person sees it differently. Somebody goes, yeah, I thought it's smaller than I thought. It's just a girl. Well, what's up with that smile? Is this smile? You know, we're all distracted by the fact that it's like the apotheosis of the humanistic achievement during the Renaissance. And I can go into that. In fact, I have gone into it, making a film with my oldest daughter, Sarah Burns, and her husband, David McMahon, a couple of years back on the life of Leonardo and sort of its climactic scene with that painting that I'm referring to. So emotional archaeologist was something I had sort of thought about, that we are in the past most usually, and why people are often turned off by history, interested in dry dates, facts, and events. We're sort of resurrecting kind of brittle relics and shards of things that we try to put together. And that I was interested in emotional archaeology, trying to get into some deeper psychology, some higher emotions that are present in the story, not that I'm trying to provoke in somebody. They will have whatever reactions they want to have, and that's perfectly okay.
Amen. Never again, I promise I won't touch so serious. Let's switch to PBS. You came up through the PBS pipeline that helped fund over 40 of your films, I think. What do you tell a 25-year-old documentarian today who no longer has on-ramps like that?
It's a really desperate situation, Susan. It's really terrible. We're all just trying to stay alive. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting, which was the entity created by the Public Broadcasting Act, was an organization, a government agency that had been around for decades and decades administering grants, mostly to stations, both NPR and PBS, across the country. And it is, of course, both of them the largest networks in the country. And rural stations would, of course, understandably get more money than urban stations that could raise money from other sources. PBS, by the time of the rescission that took away the money, was probably around 15% or 18%. I'm around 22% of my budgets were supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, but there may be rural stations that might be 50%. And so this is a devastating blow to the system. And I first, you know, would speak out last summer about how short-sighted I think it was. And yet, I think it was the intention that to create news deserts, which what any authoritarian impulse is to control information, and it is better to have disinformation and misinformation, suspicion and conspiracy distracting people than knowing a kind of the hard and sometimes very difficult facts of what's going on now or what has gone on in our complicated history. And so it's a tough moment, and that young filmmaker is now facing a much more difficult climb, as we are too, as we approach the whole set of films that we have before us, like how do we raise the money necessary? How do we overcome the deficit of the loss of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting? It's a big deal. And one of the good news is after the recession, the PBS had a million new members. You have to remember that when you see those infernal pledge drives and you're frustrated and people make jokes about tote bags, it's the way they make the money. And it's not profit. It's to support the kind of programs that I do and many, many others, including that young filmmaker who's just coming up. And only a single digit number of people, percentage of people who watch, actually pay. So by adding a million new members helped in the short term, but what we need is to get 2 or 3 million people who aren't just doing it in reaction to the funding and have now completely forgotten about it, but who are willing to sustain that. And then we might have the energy, money is one form of energy, to escape the specific gravity of these terrible decisions that have been made and imposed on us in Washington.
Okay, thank you for that. You've been coming to Telluride for, what is it, three
Ever.
Decades? From,
yeah, forever. Oh, yeah, way more than that, yeah. I came first in 85.
Oh, wow. Okay. So what is it about this Box Canyon, this particular museum, this particular upcoming film festival that keeps pulling you back every single summer?
Well, I don't need to tell your listeners what it is about that Box Canyon. They know it better than I do it, and it has got a kind of it exerts a kind of magnetic force on them and on the rest of us who feel compelled to go there every, Labor Day weekend. The festival is itself a wonderful cinematic act of faith. It's the only festival where you don't know what they're showing and you go anyway. And while you may, in the course of your deep dive into films, see something you didn't like, you'd never for a second question why that particular film was chosen. I can think of only one festival, the New York Festival, where that is also the case. So it makes Telluride, among, if not the very, I believe, the very best festival in the world for that cinematic act of faith. And then I think that I've always, because my work is mostly in American history, I've always been trying to figure out how to pay back. And I've developed over the years a relationship with the museum, and I want that museum to thrive. And I know that this is become a kind of annual ritual, which I love. And I love filling my life with those kinds of things that we do, screenings here at Dartmouth, an hour up the road from where I live, going to this particular place at a particular time. And I think it's really important to help that museum, which we love, my kids love, my grandkids love. And so for all of those reasons, I'm looking forward to being there.
Thank you. And finally, what's next for your Florentine films or Florentine films?
Well, Florentine Films was started 50 years ago or incorporated 50 years. We've been sort of operating under it for 51 years, but somehow people decided that this was the anniversary. We're working on a number of things, a history of LBJ and the Great Society, as I mentioned. My daughter Sarah Burns and my son-in-law David McMahon and I are working on a four-part history of Reconstruction, the period after the Civil War, probably the most complex and most misunderstood period in all of American history. We're working on a multi-part biography of Barack Obama. We're trying to get a film made on the life of Martin Luther King. And about a year or so ago, we decided to do a series on the history of the CIA and have begun to sort of start reading and digging into archives and things like that. So God and funding willing, that's what we hope will be coming down the pike.
God, funding, and another whole life. You get to be reborn again or multiply. Anyway, this has been Susan D. Brock. Again, delighted and honored to be speaking with Ken Burns in support of the Telluride Historical Museum. This Is What We Do will be screened on August 30th at the Palm Theater. Ken, thanks again for your time.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Bye.
Okay. All righty. I hope that was okay.